Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
G, 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 take me away.
Welcome to episode 26. This one is not for the faint of senses. It's a very intense conversation. We talk to actress and comedian Justy Dodge, one of the coolest names in comedy. We talked about pretty intense stuff, cutting and psych wards and comedy and relationships. So fasten your seatbelt and enjoy this intimate conversation with me, Matt Kaplan, and Justy Dodge.
You guys are really mellow.
We've had a long day.
A long day.
Yeah.
It's okay though. How was your day?
I just walked dogs.
You walked dogs?
Yeah, it was awful. It's gross though. That's why. Not.
How many dogs do you walk at once?
Just one dog.
Yeah. Oh, that's easy.
Are you at this time in the year, are you picking up after them or just letting it go into the snow and disappear?
Oh, I wish I could just let it go. Yeah. No, you have to pick it up.
You have to.
It's a find, I think, right?
Yeah, but I feel like that's what a lot of people do, because as the snow melts, all of a sudden, like, oh, there's dog shit.
Well, one of my dogs went up onto a snow pile, a wave. I couldn't physically get to it.
Uh-huh.
So I was just like, well, I don't. Okay, fuck, I don't know what to do.
He pooped higher than you can reach.
Yeah, it was weird, and then he went all the way to the end of the pile, and I couldn't get physically, whatever, it's stupid. I hate everything about this. I mean, I love dogs, and I thought this was going to be a solid, me and my ex-husband started a company, a little tiny dog walking company, in case one of us, was on the road, and that way we didn't lose his job.
Because he's a comedian.
My ex, yeah.
Do you say was a comedian now that he's your ex? He just doesn't exist? Or
no, we're still friendly.
You are?
Yeah, I'm funnier than him, so I'm fine with it.
What was it? You've heard it here now. What was it like being married to another comedian? Is it hard, competitive-wise, or?
There's pros and cons, I think, to any relationship. It's nice because they understand the lifestyle.
Wait, there are cons to relationships?
Yeah, I know, right? Can you imagine? That's why we're divorced.
Yeah. How long were you married for?
2 years.
2 years? Yeah. How long did you date before you got married?
2 years.
All right. So you were together for 4 years, kind of.
Four or five, something like that, yeah.
And what are the pros of being with a comedian? Obviously, sure.
They get the lifestyle, really.
Mm-hmm.
When you try to date a normal person who doesn't work in the arts, you're out till 2 a.m.
mm-hmm.
with a bunch of dudes every night, it doesn't always go over super well. I think male comics have it harder with females that aren't comedians, because it's, we're needier, I think, as the vagina is. I don't know. That's
needier in what way?
I think we just want to be, usually women tend to want to be with a guy more. I want to hang out. Let's spend time. They don't understand, unless you were with them when you were already doing comedy when the relationship started.
Right, yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So then they kind of understand what they're getting into, but then it's like, why are you gone all the time to do a free show or an open mic and you come back fucked up? It's like...
Well, is that a male-female dynamic, or is that just an artist dating a non-artist?
Okay. I don't know the answer.
I don't know. I mean, I think it's a combination, but like, yeah. like our, this doing comedy is, you know, a 24, like it's just constant. You're writing or you're trying to get booked on something or you're, you know,
yeah.
out doing mics and shows.
Well, some of it too is like, you can feel pretty satisfied or fulfilled from your art form
mm-hmm.
and you a non-artist.
Right.
Or you can feel totally, unfulfilled.
Yeah.
Yeah. It goes both ways.
That's another pro with that too, is like they do understand the highs and lows, you know. If you have a bad set, you know, and you come home and you're just, you know, a raging cunt.
Right.
They kind of get why, you know, it's like, oh, you had another bad night.
Would there be any competition in your relationship?
There wasn't. No, he was super supportive of me. Mm. Like, I was supportive of him too, but I think he was really supportive of me getting, I got stuff like a little bit like earlier than him.
We actually became friends. J.F. Harris. Mm-hmm. We became friends on Twitter.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's, Twitter friends.
Yeah, we started liking each other's stuff. Then when we took it over to Facebook, and now we're Facebook friends.
I mean, next is Instagram. What are you going to do?
It's really progressing fast.
Wow.
I kind of want to slow it down. Like, I was like, slow it down. What's your MySpace, all
this
right?
It's too much.
And what are the cons of being married to a comic?
You're married to a comic. Okay.
which is what? Which
we're,
entails
we're gross.
What?
I think we're gross people. We really are. Like, people, I think it's... Being a comic, I think, as an outside person, people really romanticize like the idea of it. They're like, oh my God, that's so amazing.
Yeah.
Your life must be awesome. And it's like, no, I'm a struggling artist. I have to walk dogs and I can't reach their poop to pick it up. Like,
that's so glamorous.
I know, right?
Would you feel at times also you were just, the two of you were sort of isolated in your comedian bubble and you weren't getting turned on to information outside of that?
Yeah, they're like, he was really bad with that, where when I'd come home or whatever, I'd be like, I need an hour where we don't talk about comedy. I don't want to talk about comedy. I don't want to hear about what you think or, you know, did or a joke. I don't care.
Right. Because I used to be a musician, dating a musician. And that was hard because I feel like my walls were closing in, like everything involved around music and booking agents and all this stuff. I'm just like, I just want to think about something totally different.
Yeah.
It is that. Was that the most challenging thing? I mean, are you dating a comic now?
No.
He's not a comic.
I'll never do it. I was engaged to one before, my husband too.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'm a glutton for punishment. You know what I mean? I'm just like, I don't learn from my mistakes. Let's keep doing this.
Is that part of self-destruction, you think?
I mean, partially. I think it's just because we're surrounded by each other. You know what I mean?
Yeah, like, but it is the most unromantic place to meet someone.
Yeah.
Dark.
But it's like the same, like, humor is a very attractive quality, especially for women. Like, we, you know, we tend to be more attracted to a man if he's funny, opposed to like a dude being attracted to a woman if she is.
Right.
Interesting.
Yeah, often guys are not attracted to women who are
funny. Intimidating. Yeah.
Yeah, it's like, I'm supposed to be the funny one.
Yeah, I've never had a guy try to fuck me after a show, and I think that's ridiculous. Like, if I like, I'm so angry about that, because I watch some of like my pile of sad guy friends.
Yeah.
And they have a good set, and like, just these fucking hot chicks will come up to them, and I'm like, really? Really?
Right.
Just because of that?
Well, a lot of it's just that, oh, they're so brave to get up.
Right.
Just that they got on stage. Yeah.
It's appealing.
It could be that guys are intimidated. I mean, obviously you're in a relationship right now, so I don't know if you're fucking other guys at shows or not. But still, I think it is intimidating for a guy to see a woman up there like, oh, she's so strong, and they assume that this is who she is all the time. Yeah. I can't deal with that.
I get that.
But of course that's not necessarily the case.
I'm just annoyed by it. I'm just annoyed I never get hit on after a show.
I'm surprised though, because I'm not that way. I'd like a girl to be witty and funny.
But you also do comedy.
Yeah, that's true.
You know what I mean?
Right. So guys that don't, guys have a thing where they have to be the dominant, smarter, more successful.
I think a lot of guys do. I think that's more.
It's like an insecurity.
It might be. Yeah, probably something like that.
But it's also, you know, they say it's good to be the smartest. It's good to be, surround yourself with people that are smarter and funnier than you.
Mm-hmm.
What's up with that, guys?
I don't know.
who said that? Is that just a general thing?
Yeah, it's a general thing. Yeah, always surround yourself with people that are a little smarter than you, or in this case, funnier.
Well, that's impossible for me. I mean, I'm kind of a genius. That's why I'm hilarious.
So how did you get into comedy? Was it through men?
Yeah, that was my
after my seventh marriage to a comedian, I was like, maybe I ought to try it.
I should just do this. I wish. No, sorry, I'm taking a swig of my seltzer.
Your ex, JF, moved to LA, right?
Yeah, he's got a chick there now, his girlfriend.
Does that make it all easier?
Whoa, 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 what? Which one?
Gary, go first.
What, does it make it easier, him moving across the country?
No, because, I mean, like, we still talk. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? I'm happy for him.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Is it a clean over?
Yeah, yeah. No, we like, when he comes into town, we get coffee and we'll talk and stuff like that.
Is his new girlfriend a comedian, or did he also learn?
He learned. Okay. She's a makeup artist, I think. Yeah.
Okay. Is your current boyfriend, is he an artist of any sort?
No, he bartends at a comedy club, so I guess it's like almost as bad because he's still in the world and he knows.
Right.
But, he, I mean, he does audio stuff too on the side.
Okay.
But
yeah, because I think it's, you know, maybe not the same exact art form, but if you're both artists, but
oh, yeah,
different,
that's great. I think
you have
that's a
some
great
space,
thing.
But you both kind of get that you're both a little weird in that specific
yeah.
kind of way.
The entertainment world makes sense to both of you, but it's not the exact same
yeah.
field.
Yeah. Well, it's dating a musician is hard because they make noise. They make sound, you know, you got to hear them playing.
And comedians just cry all the time. So I started doing comedy, though. I'm from northern Minnesota. And
northern Minnesota?
Yeah.
Are you like, that's around Fargo, yeah?
Well, Fargo's yeah. in North Dakota, actually.
Oh, okay.
But if,
Fargo, Minnesota.
If you
yeah,
watch
right.
the movie Fargo, yeah, no, they have it in Brainerd, Minnesota.
Okay,
which
right.
I was in the Stateside Recorder for 3.5 months there, so it's not okay. a big deal. I'm not bragging, but every time that movie comes on, I'm like, I lived there for 3 months, just in a locked facility.
Were you doing comedy in Minnesota?
Never did comedy in Minnesota. Okay. I took an Amtrak train here when I was 20, and I'm like, I'm going to do this. I'm going to be an actor, and comedy is going to lend itself to me.
So you moved here from Minnesota
uh-huh.
to pursue?
More acting, but I got into comedy because I thought it would help.
Mm-hmm.
And then it kind of just reversed.
It reversed, huh?
Yeah.
So you took an Amtrak here.
Yep.
Had you been to New York before?
I visited once.
And you moved on an Amtrak.
Yep.
That
when I
sounds
was 20.
That sounds so romantic.
Oh, doesn't it? You know, it's like a Lifetime movie without the rape. That's really.
It's like a 1920s Lifetime movie.
Two suitcases following my dreams.
You had the stick with the thing.
Right.
The
yeah.
bandana.
Oh, Johnny Appleseed.
Yeah.
No, I'll never. I mean, that's the stupidest thing I could have done. Like, I could have just taken a plane, you know, and saved yeah. myself hours. Like, it was like a 36-hour train ride, but I was trying to be yes. adventurous.
But you obviously didn't come with much stuff either.
Two suitcases, that was it.
That's it. Two suitcases and a whole new life.
And a whole new life.
So 20 years old moving here. Did you know anybody?
I have a cousin, a first mm-hmm. cousin, who I never see, which is really
weird. Of course.
Right. Live close. Yeah, we live in the same, you know, city, but I don't see him.
So you came to New York at his 20-year-old girl mm-hmm. from Minnesota
mm-hmm.
to pursue fame and fortune
oh,
as
yeah.
an actress.
And it's doing fucking wonders.
Well, you never know when things happen for people.
No, you don't.
Yeah.
It happen overnight. It's crazy.
Yeah, sometimes people, when they get success later than they thought, they're like, oh, no, looking back, it makes sense.
Yeah, because you can... Well, that's the thing is, like, Kyle can answer that. He's like, you can never make it too late. You can make it too early, but you can never make it too late. And mm-hmm. that makes so much sense.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Because if you... I have friends that have hit some sort of fame and success at a young age, and they're pretty fucked up from it.
Yeah, they're not ready for it. Like, you know, for numerous reasons, their mental, you know, their mental state isn't there. They're
right.
still... They haven't lived a lot of life, a lot of them. Like, when you're super young. And then... Just you don't have the chops to back it up, I feel like. You know, you get
yeah.
put on one of these guy code, girl code shows and you blow up and you don't have like the time to do on stage.
Yeah, and they say like the age you hit fame is the age you, the mental age you stay at.
Oh, really? That's just like drugs, right?
Exactly, yeah. I was going to say that, exactly. It's the same as addiction. That's, boom, that's your mental age.
And it's fucked up too, because it is the industry's fault, you know what I mean, for pushing. So if you want somebody to be famous, like mm-hmm. the kid's going to be famous, but they push too hard, and then, you know, somebody with real potential who could have been amazing ends up just in a downward spiral and can't crawl back out of it.
Right.
I don't know. I've seen that happen a lot, like over the years with certain people.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's sad. It's super sad.
Where they can't handle fame?
Yeah. Or they just get too much too quick and mm-hmm. they just, yeah, they weren't ready for it. So they shoot themselves in the foot for whatever reason. Yeah.
Look at all the child actors. They yeah. rarely survive.
Dude, child actors are a whole, like, that's the saddest thing to me is because somebody pushed you into doing something.
Yeah.
And then you've known, like the Olsen twins, like that's all they've known is being famous. They've mm-hmm. never not, you know, mm-hmm. been famous.
Yeah.
And people are like, I can't believe they're so fucked up. Really? You can't?
Well, at least you have, you know, you're a comedian, you're writing your material, you have an art form. As actors, they kind of just like, you know, give me something to say and I say it. I guess it's, I don't know. I just don't have the, unless you're an amazing actor, uh-huh. but a lot of actors just, you're not really expressing yourself as much
mm-hmm.
as a comedian, so.
Sure, because you're just raw. and on, you know.
You're just an empty shell. Yeah. Fill me with words.
It's like, well, that's like improv, right? Improv's like the worst of all of it. Like,
well, at least improv, you're expressing some part of yourself. You're making stuff up.
I know,
you're
being creative. You can never turn it off. Improv people are like the worst of stand-up comedians and actors combined.
Why is that?
They're just so annoying to me. And I mean, if it's good improv, it's really good improv.
Yeah.
But it's just like, ugh, he's like hanging out for the most, just not everybody. I shouldn't say that, because I'm sure I have friends that do improv and stuff, and I'm going to, you know, people are going to get pissed. But,
of course, you can't generalize the whole.
But Jesus, like they are just, at least comics just are sad and sit in the corner for the most part, you know. Uh-huh. And actors, I don't know, they just talk. But like, they're just on improv. People are like, do you do improv? Is that where
I just want to hear, I didn't want to say anything. I wanted to let you.
But you seem like the rarity because you're quiet.
But I have a self-awareness about myself and improv.
Okay.
And I share a lot of what, you know, you're saying and what many other people, and, you know, and I sort of have found myself less interested in it over time because it's like, I don't have that in me. I'm not the kind of person that like gets on stage super excited, you know, and in that way of like, yeah, come on everyone. That's not who I am.
That was so always,
it's not, it's something I don't feel in that way. So I love it in theory, but in practice, I understand why so many people find it annoying because it's, to me, the success rate is low for the general audience. Among other improvisers, it's all awesome. But for most people going to see improv, it's like, I don't know even what's happening.
Right.
Yeah.
It's also super goofy.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think that's hard coming for, like, you know, a lot of comedians are pretty serious, which is, so it's hard to see a goofy, especially the way they come out on stage. Hey,
give us a suggestion. Give us a suggestion. Stop. Just stop it. I'm so mean. I'm sorry.
Nice. I'm sensing some anger coming out. That's good.
Well, it's just my personality.
You got to let it out.
That was honest. I don't, you know. Yeah. I think it's good to be truthful about things like that. I was more offended by Gary saying that actors are just a shell without any expression.
Well, I lived in LA for 4 years, so, you know, I've seen a lot of them. But yeah, there's definitely some that have something to say. But some actors are amazing actors, but they really don't have much personality, but they could pretend that they do.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
Well, also there's so many, like the forms of acting too, when you're talking TV to film to theater, they're all so different. Like you can make anybody look good on film now. You really can with technology. Oh. Anybody can look amazing.
Oh, good.
No, it's like the theater and like where you get, you know, the chops you need.
Yeah, those
are
the real.
That's crazy. Yeah, that's why so many famous, you know, actors do come to Broadway, because they want to prove their point. They want to prove that they're really good.
Or also to feel the moment.
Sure.
You know, you've been on a film or set, it's just so stop, start, boring.
Yeah,
boring,
film
boring.
Sets suck. Being, like, I did do acting. I was, you know, took classes, obviously, when I first moved here for like 4 years. And it was, I love that feeling of like the live theater, but.
Are you still acting?
I would. I just, it's so hard to juggle that, you know,
the time
with doing stand-up, you know,
and
trying to work a day job and trying to have maintain some kind of normalcy with a relationship or anything.
Yeah.
You know,
well, even with comedy, it's like I'm not one of those people that goes up 6-7 nights a week, because I feel like I need a couple of days to just not do that and live life and just be a normal person to put it into my comedy.
A great thing with acting, as we were saying earlier, that it's never too late. I think especially with acting. I think definitely with stand-up, but especially with acting, it's never too late, because you'll always need people of all ages to be performing.
Yeah.
There's many instances of people that found fame and success in their 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s for the first time.
Yeah.
Think of all the auditions they went on for all those years.
And many of them, you know, they might have retired from their job, or, you know, like a lot of times, like teachers, they'll teach and they've always wanted to act. And then, you know, in their 60s,
pursue their dreams.
They'll pursue their dreams. So a lot of people, it's like, oh, I just want to, you know, I did it when I was younger. I want to come back to it.
Right.
Yeah.
So
I'm sorry. I'm done with that.
Getting feisty.
Yeah. No, it's like things I think about, but go ahead, Gary.
That's good.
Good question.
Let's address our guest.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
No, you're great.
I'm not today's guest.
So were you going on auditions and doing all that when you got here?
Yeah, some. You know, I didn't have like management for acting, but I'd go on like the, you know, student films and all that.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, acting is one of the few things where like you're not doing it until someone hires you to do it.
Ugh, yeah.
You know, even as a musician or a stand-up, you can kind of just do your thing.
Right. Well, there are open mics. There's not like acting open mics. There's no like, let me go try out my monologue. Well,
that's, right.
That's what improv is, I guess. It's for...
Yeah, I guess like,
stretch out while you're not actually...
Yeah.
Somewhere.
Yeah. So how did you stumble onto stand-up? You were like, oh, I should just start doing stand-up because it'll give me...
Yeah, that was the reason.
To like, get more exposure as an actor?
To move... Yeah, I wanted to move here to act, and then I just immediately started doing stand-up, too.
Why not improv?
I only could deal with two art forms at once. I don't know.
Have you thought of improv? Because that would be the more natural place as an actor to go.
I took, like, a class, and I would never do it again. I mean, you know.
You took one class?
Yeah.
And you're like, this doesn't fit my personality?
Yeah, it's, like, fine. Zip, zap, zap. Because like, I can't. Why are we clapping? I don't like this.
Was it too goofy for you?
It was. I mean, it was fun. I do think it has like the benefits of, you know, thinking quick on your feet and stuff like that, and having to work with other people.
Yeah.
No. I don't. It's not for me.
Yeah. I did that too. I took improv before I did stand up. I did improv, and it's definitely too goofy for me. But I really think it helped the stand up.
I bet it. No. Yeah. I think they all like. Each one of the like, acting, and I think they all lend themselves to each other if you do them.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
But like improv has this lesson that's good for life. And like the whole yes and thing and being present in the moment and, you know, following your fear and being
brave.
You
could just read a book for that. You could just read a self-help book or, go to therapy.
A bumper sticker.
Yeah.
I see. I'm battling two cynics here. I'm starting to see what I'm dealing with.
I think each thing is different for every person. So one person might get a lot out of improv and the message behind it. Another person doesn't need it as much.
Right. Do you feel like improv didn't serve your stand-up at all?
I think it did in like the sense of like, you know, the quick thinking kind of, thinking on your feet.
You do zip, zap, zap before every stand-up
Could you set. Imagine how fucking annoying that would be? If, like a group of comics just started doing that before a show.
That always like made me cringe.
Yeah, it's so dumb. I mean, I get it, but God.
So you're like, all right, I'm an actress, but I'm going to do stand-up to get more exposure.
I thought it would lend itself. I thought like I would just, you know, because I was so funny growing up. Everyone always told me how funny I was. So yeah. I was like, oh, I'll just skyrocket through stand-up. And then obviously I'll just get all these acting roles.
Right. You know? Well, I don't know who said it, but because it's one thing to be funny in the moment and with your friends, mm-hmm. but stand-up's kind of a different muscle.
God, it is so different.
Yeah. Because you have to set the tone.
Mm-hmm.
You have to set the premise.
You have to have jokes.
And you have to have jokes, yeah. Well, when you're with your friends and you're joking around, it's like, all right, the tone, the background story, mm-hmm. everything's the premise, everything's all set.
Yeah, you're not getting a laugh is great, but it's not mandatory. Like, that's the point of stand up. You know, you're trying right. to get laughs, which you might be with a group of your friends, but it's also not like, oh, I just bombed in this conversation. Like, you know.
I mean, we've all said a joke that wasn't funny in
of course,
a conversation.
100 of them. Hundreds and hundreds
oh, really?
Of them.
Oh, really? Not that many.
Yeah. Well, no, I've had moments.
So you started doing... how'd it go the first time? How was your first time?
I kind of went into it backwards, too, because most people start going to mics.
You went into it from behind?
Yeah. Most of my life. You know, like, what I did is I got... I just messaged, this was still in MySpace, was, you know, the thing.
Yeah.
And I just literally messaged every comedian I could find and just kind of explained my story, how I'm moving to New York, blah, 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 blah. And so many people actually were really nice and wrote back. You know, a lot of dudes were creepy and were like, let's, you know, fuck when you get here. And I'm like, this isn't what I want to do.
Really? They would say
yeah,
like just
some,
like that.
Some were so creepy and, you know, others were super nice. I mean, like, I don't know if it was Lewis Black actually or somebody who just like did his, you know, yeah. MySpace account, but they wrote back to me really positively and it was really cool, like certain ones. And then this female comic, Maria Shahada,
mm-hmm.
I don't know why I said female comic, but like you guys wouldn't know, I'm so whatever. She introduced me, she was a Barker at the World, the Broadway,
mm-hmm.
when it was like 8 years ago, when it was kind of like the thing to do when you started. It was to go there, bark, because you got up every night and you got paid, you know, for your flyering. And it was actually a really good group of people at the time.
Yeah.
Like Mike Drucker was there.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. There was just like, yeah, it was beneficial, but I wasn't like writing. I would just, you know, so I did like maybe three mics and then I just started barking for a year and a half.
Uh-huh.
Like, I never went to mics. I never, like, tried to write new. I wasn't branching out. It was like, I'm just doing this, and I'm getting up constantly with my terrible, like, 5-6 minutes of, like, not real jokes, but...
But in front of a real audience.
Yeah, but it was in front of a real audience. And then I took, like, a break for, like, a year then, because I didn't know...
Why did you take a break?
I think I was just over... because I didn't know what I wanted to do really with it. Like, I kind of wanted to do more, but I was almost like starting over because then I had to branch out and I was like, I don't know what I'm going to do. Like, I don't want to go to mics now.
You got spoiled.
I did. And I knew enough people too that after I took that year off, I went and had a really good conversation with Mike DiStefano, who passed away.
Yeah.
A few years back, and
it was that conversation.
Yeah,
that
and
killed
that
him.
Got me. Yeah, it was that. It killed him and got me back into stand up. It wasn't like, yeah, no,
win-win.
It was. Oh, that's such a fucked up thing too. Is like that dude like beats heroin and AIDS and then dies of a heart attack at 44. It's like really, really life. That's just whatever. But no, he. We had a really good conversation, and I just got back into it, and I was fortunate where I knew so many people from Broadway because, like, you know. The barking room was one thing, but then it'd be like the downstairs where like a lot of headliners and like good comics.
The bigger room.
So I got to know them all. So it was like kind of beneficial in that way.
What did he say that got you back into it?
I mean, we just had a long talk about, you know, if you want to do it or don't, you know, and
you can't half ass it really.
You really can't.
Yeah.
You know, and then I saw like something hit me really hard with his tattoos, which I got after he died. He had Here and Now, your Zen bullshit.
Uh-huh. No. So those are actual tattoos on your wrists.
Yeah. And he had them. And cause I remember asking him like, what is that for? And he was very into Buddhism. And he was like, you know, what time is it now? Where are we here? And I really liked that whole, like, just kind of like, live life. Ugh, I hate sounding like a, you know, Dr. Phil self-help thing. I hate that. But it was true and it hit me really hard.
Yeah.
And then I just started kind of...
Was it after he died that you got those tattoos on your wrists?
After he died.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So when you look at those, that Here and Now tattoo, does it bring you to the Here and Now or does it bring you to the time when you're getting the tattoo?
The time when I was getting the tattoo. No, I mean, it does. It brings me, you know, it centers me sometimes where it's like a nice, you know, stupid but sweet reminder. It's like, okay, come on, dude, calm down. Because it's so easy in this to get too far ahead of ourselves, forget why we're even doing it. Because you're just like, I need to get something. I need to get, you know, a credit or I need my management to do this or...
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, maybe I should just focus on, you know, being good. Maybe that's, you know.
Totally, yeah.
And that's so hard to do, I think, in New York.
It is. There's so much stimulation and distraction, but it's good to, in general, just be conscious of the moment and the process, right?
Yeah.
It's hard. Yeah. So the first time you went, it was an open mic?
Yeah, it was in the basement of a taco place.
How'd you do?
I went up dead last. And it was good though, because, you know, I'm this little girl from Minnesota, like, this is my first time.
You said it was your first time?
Yeah.
That's
so good. They were like supportive of it.
Right.
So
you had a little bit of encouragement.
Yeah. So I did like a handful of mics and then, like I said, just barked and then.
So the year that you quit, did you feel like something was missing?
Yeah, not something missing so much as like, I thought that's what, you know, it was. I thought that's it. Like I just barked for like 3 hours a night and then I went on stage for 5 minutes. Like what was the point of that? I don't understand.
Right.
And because I wasn't, you know, really doing it to its full.
Did you know you were just taking time off or at that point were you thinking maybe you're done?
Yeah, I thought I was probably done.
Were you looking for another outlet?
I was still doing the acting stuff at that time.
Okay.
But yeah, I just didn't fit.
Is acting an outlet?
Yes, Gary.
Yeah, I think it can be. Haven't you listened to anything? Yeah, I think it can be.
I mean, I guess it's an outlet if you're actually doing it. If you're in a play or if you're in a show. But if you're just going on auditions, it feels like constipation to me.
Sure. Yeah. I was in classes, though. Like, that was a thing. So, it's weekly. So, it's like... And then we'd work on scenes in the classes and outside. So,
it was you're doing it.
Yeah. It was a lot of work. Yeah.
Yeah. You have to conjure up these emotions.
And they'd go... Like, my teacher had, like, a process. Like, this fourth process thing that she created.
What is the fourth process?
There's just four processes that you go through with each scene that we would do.
What are these? I don't want to pay for the class.
You just teach me here. No, like first process, you would like, it's reading the script with your partner, like in your own voice. And then you read it in the characters and then you kind of mold. Like her big thing was like the character becomes you. Like it's like you mold into the character. So
the character becomes a form of you or
yeah,
you
both. Okay. So like it just like, yeah, you mold in, you become the character you're going to act, but
you
it's also
it
a part
own.
Of, yeah. So and that was a really cool concept, I thought.
Yeah.
So she had a bunch of different, the processes. That was one of them. And I don't remember the third and the fourth was like all with sound and movement that was extended.
sound and movement.
Yeah, like you'd go in a circle with your partner, and it would be a extension of sound and movement where everything would just start to be exaggerated, movement. Yeah, and you'd mock each other, and it was really cool.
Like
to
mirror
watch.
Each other.
Yeah. In different ways, and then break out of it and then reconnect again.
Right.
Yeah.
I guess that teaches you how to work with someone else.
And to use your instrument to your body and to the space.
Right.
To forget when you're when you're doing theater, you have to be so much bigger because you're performing out to an audience mm-hmm. instead of on screen.
Yeah. You could be much smaller mm-hmm. movements translate. Yeah.
Yeah.
So you like acting?
I do. I mean, I'm always going to be very passionate about it, but I'm not going on fucking auditions unless, I'm sent out or whatever.
You prefer stand up?
Yeah. I'm not going to. Yeah. Listen to me. What am I going to fucking do? I'm this person.
Yeah. So how have you evolved as a stand up?
Oh, God. I don't know.
Are you doing what you do now? Is it similar to how you started?
No. God, no. I hope not. That's terrifying. Yeah. Can you imagine if I'm still doing the same? I think I was very, because people tell me I'm dark as a stand-up a lot, which I am, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think I'm dark. I think I'm just honest. But
have you been dark as a, were you dark as a person before you did stand-up?
Yeah. I'm just this kind of person, I think.
People always told you you're dark?
Yeah, I'm not negative, they'll say sometimes, or, uh-huh. Blunt, push, mm-hmm. whatever. But a lot of, I'm whatever, it doesn't even matter. But I was, the jokes I started with too, it was, about being in psychiatric care and eating disorders and very, very dark stuff, cutting.
Yeah.
So to start off with that heavy, kind of material and not know how to perform it. So it came off very self-deprecating uh-huh. in the beginning. And then I finally, I went to the other extreme where I kind of came off really mad about it.
Right.
I was trying to show them that I'm not being self-deprecating. And right. I think I finally have found some kind of a balance. Where if you let the audience know you're okay,
yeah.
they're okay without, being angry and pushing it down there. I am fine.
Right. Yeah. Well, I think that's one of the reasons they say you shouldn't feel emotional about anything that you're doing, because if you're emotional about it, you need to separate yourself emotionally from it. And I've noticed that if I have a bit that's kind of from an emotional place, uh-huh. it doesn't really get the laugh.
Well, do you think that, I think you need the emotion to kind of back it up, but I think if it's too soon or too much of
exactly
a fresh wound, that's when it doesn't work.
It can come off as a confessional or you're at your therapist's office.
Or you're scared it's not going to work and you're timid to tell this, personal detail. That's when I think it doesn't work. But I do think you need the emotion behind it or else what's the point? You're passionate about telling it.
Yeah, you're just a flatline joke.
Yeah.
Yeah. So is this something that actually happened to you? Were you in psychiatric care?
Oh, yeah.
See, this is what I love about conversations. how information just slowly, organically gets revealed.
Yeah, it comes out. It always does in podcasts. But, all my stuff is honest.
Mm-hmm.
All the psych ward stuff and what have you.
Psych ward, you in a psych ward?
Yeah, several.
Several?
Obviously,
Several different times?
Yeah.
Did you get put there or did you put yourself there?
I got put there because I was an adolescent. I went when I was 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17.
Each year?
It became a routine.
It's summer camp. Yeah.
Dusty's gone again. Everyone was okay, this is the time of year.
Because you're a bad kid?
I had a lot of mental issues. I was put on a lot of different antidepressants. I was a cutter. I started cutting at 11.
Okay.
And I got really bad. Throughout my teens
mm-hmm.
and what have you. So that was a big, obviously that makes sense. If your kid is, slitting up their arms and legs, you might be I don't know what to really do here. I might put them somewhere.
Yeah. I'm sure most parents wouldn't know how to handle
it. No, but I mean, those places, dude, they'll make you crazier than you are.
That's the problem.
Yeah. I was really fucking sane compared to some of the kids in there.
Right.
But if you're told you're crazy long enough, that's embedded into your head. You start to kind of get crazy,
Yeah, exactly.
So, and you're in a locked facility and it's I don't know.
Do you feel based on the stereotypes of the Midwest versus New York, do you feel you needed to come to New York or a place like this to sort of find a place
for
the strong emotions you're having?
Yeah. And I just think, cause it's especially where I'm from, it's very close. It's closed-minded in the sense they're just not aware of anything outside of their bubble. I'm from a small, small town. I graduated high school with 44 kids.
Wow.
So it's one of those very close. We don't, put your emotions down. I don't care if you use booze or alcohol. You just put them down. Let's not talk about stuff. This is not, I'm so worried what the neighbors think.
Right.
So it's like, you know, I was labeled as the crazy person in school because everyone knows everyone's business.
That's how small towns are.
Yeah. It's, you know.
So this is part of the reason that you probably stayed that way. Or feeling
possibly,
that way.
Possibly, yeah, probably.
Yeah.
And then I ran away, yeah, screaming.
Is cutting something, and I don't want to simplify with one phrase or sentence, but is it because you were raised to kind of keep your emotions and everything inside? This was like, I need to let something out.
A release.
I need to feel something. I need to get this out.
Sure, yeah. Especially, yeah, because it's, if you're going through so much emotional pain and you don't know how to deal with it, especially at like 11's young. Like I look back on it now, I'm like, Jesus, like where, I didn't get the idea. I don't know where it came from. It's like almost the emotional pain is so overwhelming that you have to turn it physical. And I think there's a part of it that's a release. And then another part where you feel you need to be punished. Mm. And then it becomes like an addiction, to be honest.
The cutting.
Yeah.
Cause you, what's addictive about it?
It becomes like you're saying a release. Uh-huh. That's what it feels like. So it's like almost in a really fucked up way, it becomes like soothing.
Right.
Like it makes, you know what I mean? It's a coping mechanism that's completely unhealthy and, you know, not good, but.
For some reason, I want to equate it to like, it's just like an outlet.
Yeah.
It's like having an idea for a joke is one thing, but it's not till you say it on stage that it becomes released.
Sure.
Is it kind of like that?
Kind of.
Should I not be comparing cutting to jokes?
No, it's fine. I have great cutting jokes. So. No, but it's, to be really honest, it's just as like an alcoholic drinks to deal with, you know, or a drug user or any, it's just visible. That's the only difference.
Well, alcohol and drugs is more to numb it or to escape those feelings.
Sure. With but cutting, I think it's a way to also, like it's a release, but it also
it is, huh?
is a, yeah, it's kind of a, yeah, it's hard to.
Well, the thing with drugs and alcohol is that you don't get the release of the emotions. You just numb them.
Well, I think a lot of times with alcohol and probably other drugs too, maybe cocaine, other things, uppers, you are able to express stuff that you wouldn't normally be able to if you're feeling repressed in certain ways. Like, yeah. I'm going to get drunk and go crazy.
Yeah, a lot of people do that because they're social that way. Or, you know, or I can talk. It makes me feel better to be around a bunch of people. That's why everyone's a drunk, you know, an alcoholic in the comedy world. I feel like it makes it easier, to interact socially and... Mm-hmm.
That's a great, well, you deal with your social anxiety mm-hmm. by not being present, by being drunk. It sure does work. So what's it like in a psych ward? Well, you're in a children's psych ward, right?
Yeah, I was in the adolescent. Mm-hmm. But like Miller Dwan, I was in that one like 4 times, and that's a short-term facility. So I'd go from anywhere to like a week to 3 weeks, and then they'd discharge you.
And you'd be taken out of school for this?
Yeah, like they had like, you know, like a... kind like your schools could send stuff over and you'd have school throughout the day, but not real school. It was like alternative.
Right.
And then
you become a thing in school, especially in a small town.
Yeah, it's that was awful. Yeah. Everyone knew and it was just very uncomfortable.
Right.
I get teased a lot. I got into a fight with a girl one time and I punched her because I have anger issues also.
Uh-huh.
And one of her friends put whiteout all over her arms, like cuts. Uh-huh. And then like walked around the school like, I'm Justy, I'm trying to get attention and stuff like that. And it's like, I get it now and it's like, whatever. But yeah, as a kid that will, you know, I'm already dealing with like trying to hide this and it's completely open. And
right.
So that was a lot.
Were you putting whiteouts on your cuts?
No, it was just, you know.
That's pretty creative.
Just use markers, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that girl had problems too. She wanted
she
the
was
attention
fat
using
and annoying.
You. Yeah, definitely. She deserved to get punched.
Bitch.
And they put you on all these meds in the psych wards, right?
Yeah. Which I don't know. I mean, I'm not against medicating yourself, especially with, you know, antidepressants. I do think we're too quick to jump to it now, especially mm-hmm. with children where, you know, something as simple as their diet might be a thing.
Right.
And I was, I'm 11, 12, 13, 14. It's like, I'm going through the changes. I'm going through puberty. Of course I'm going to be fucking angry and screwed up. That's just normal.
Mm-hmm.
So you putting all these, you know, chemicals in me and what have you, I don't know. So I didn't agree with that.
It's very disconcerting when I hear of kids on meds.
Yeah.
Cause their chemistry's just developing. They're just developing.
Yep. Sometimes I think it is necessary, and I understand that. I'm not saying in every case, but I think, society is way too quick to do, like, just throw you a med.
How long were you on one specific?
No, I was on everything.
Everything. They just kept switching them?
Kept switching them, and I think that's kind of what screwed me up too, is because I was 11 when they first put me on them.
Yeah.
And I just remember my mom and the doctors being like, this is going to make you better. It's going to, so that was like embedded in my 11-year-old head.
Right.
Where I'm like, oh, okay. So pills make me better. So that's probably why, you know, as I got older and started doing heavier drugs and pill popping, I was like, oh, that's why, probably because, you know, for a majority of my life, they told me taking this pill was going to fix me.
Right. But it did it? Did it? Did you stop cutting at some point?
No. I mean, I still, like, that's the weird, like, I haven't for a, you know, I still have slips. I do. I'm still in therapy. You know, I think this is just a lifelong battle, like any kind of addictive issue. Yeah, it's not nearly as, you know, frequent as it used to be. Like, you know, for years it was just daily, numerous times a day, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I mean, that's, it's funny because I still do, I'll get stares a lot, like from, because my arm is very scarred up, but it's kind of like, I fuck with people now. It's like fun, you know, like I make jokes about it where I'm like, you know, I love cats, you know, it's like fun now for like every, like, because it's whatever. And it's actually kind of weirdly informative. And I've had like young girls come up to me and talk to me who are also cutters because they see my arm.
Right.
And I think it gives them some kind of hope. I've talked to, you know.
Why always the arm? Is it just because it's closest, it's easiest?
Well, I'm right-handed, so it's like my left arm is fucked up.
But never, like, do you ever...
Yeah, it's all over my
question.
Body.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I've moved. I'm not just like a one-armed, you know, cutter. Okay. I got everywhere.
You've explored.
Right.
Yeah.
Now, is it a similar drive to suicide? Are they related?
Not at all. That's a big misconception people have.
Uh-huh.
Because everyone assumes, like, when especially a young kid's cutting, that they want to kill themselves. And I'm not saying they're not always, or they're not suicidal. They could be, but normally that's not the case. It's a release, or sometimes it is an attention thing with kids too.
Mm-hmm. And some, I've heard of it being like, it's a way for some people to just feel.
Yeah.
You can physically feel.
I think that kind of goes back to, you're so emotionally like overwhelmed and it hurts and you don't know what to do. So to turn it into physical.
Right.
You feel that and you see that and it makes it like that's how you're feeling.
Yeah. Head to body.
Yeah. Right.
You know, that's how I think about smoking. Like, you know, when I quit smoking, like I would just bring my fingers up to my lips and take a breath.
Yeah.
I'd be like, oh, well, then maybe that's a lot of it. I just wanted that mind-body connection.
I could see that.
And especially with the breath involved. So you put your fingers together and you pull them towards your lips and your mind's going, oh, yeah, bring your fingers up.
Mm-hmm.
Take a breath. Let it out. And in that moment, you just feel so like...
Because you're still doing all the action to it?
Yeah. And it's like, you know, I don't know. Maybe I don't need to smoke.
Well, that's pretty, you know, big of you.
It worked. It worked at least for a little while, but it's hard.
Yeah. I still smoke.
Yeah.
I'm supposed to quit in the next 2 weeks.
Really? Is that part of the plan?
Why 2 weeks?
Because it's my birthday and my boyfriend just quit and I'm kind of being a dick because I'm smoking in the house all the time.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah. How long has he quit for?
What's he on? I mean, he's cheated a couple times, but he quit for like a year and a half and then went back to it. About a year ago.
Well, when you don't smoke, you really notice how much it stinks.
I hate the smell too.
Yeah.
When I'm out, but he loves it. That's the weird thing. He loves it. Like him and his dad used to be a heavy smoker and his dad's hilarious. He'll follow people who are smoking if we're walking on the street. Like he'll go up to smell the cigarette smoke they're blowing.
He likes that secondhand.
It's so funny. And I'm like, what are you doing? He's like, I just love that smell. Right. I love it. And I'm like, you're so creepy right now because you're following a dude and it just looks weird. Yeah.
He could just light a cigarette and just put it under his face.
Yeah. It's so funny.
So this is an ongoing battle. So do you have a handle on it? Do you feel like you have it? Not smoking, but the cutting.
Yeah. Back to that addiction.
Yeah.
No, yeah, I do. Like I said, I have slips, you know, but they're very, you know, it's rare. It's every like few months, if that.
You mentioned that the pills kind of led you to other stuff.
Yeah, I did meth for a while too.
In pill form?
No.
Yeah.
In straight meth form. In sweet, sweet meth form.
That crystal crunchy meth?
Well, Midwest, you know, what are you going to... Actually, the funny thing with that is too, is like I had been to rehab. I got put there way too young. Like I shouldn't have got put, because I was smoking pot. But because of all this psychiatric stuff and they started to, you know, take piss tests from, cause they're like, are you doing drugs? Cause they can't figure out what's wrong with you.
Was it drugs or was it?
It was just pot. It was so not a big deal. And so I got UA'd, it's called, and I got put into outpatient treatment and then I kept getting dirty UA'd. So they sent me into rehab and I'm like, I shouldn't be here. Like, these are kids who do eight balls of, like, you know, it's like, this is nuts.
Right.
And, yeah, that was really weird. So, and I went to NA for a long time and AA, which is so funny because I didn't have a problem still. So I almost feel like that made me have a problem because I listened to these stories and I'm like, I should go back out for a couple of years and then come back and be around you people.
Well, there's a running theme here so far because in the psych ward as a kid, you felt like everyone else is much more messed up than you.
Right. Yeah, they were. But I mean, that made sense to be there because I was, you know, hurting myself and what have you. Like, yeah. When I first went into rehab, there was no reason for it.
No, rehab for pot is silly.
That's so ridiculous.
Yeah. We're like the tough cokehead kids making fun of you.
Yeah. Well, no, but believe me, that was the thing is like the first day you go in, you have to do like, it's called a drug history chart with every, you know, buddy else, all the other kids that were in there. And you put every drug you've done, how often. And I'm just like, my chart was so like sad. It was almost like, I was almost like embarrassed where I was like, I don't know what this,
you're like making up drugs. You
haven't done. Like, oh, this is so weird. Like why? Ugh. I like to, you know, give it my all when I'm going to do something. I commit. So I felt like, yeah, no one believed me. They're like, I don't think you're being honest about this. And I'm like, no, I am. I just shouldn't fucking be here for smoking pot.
Yeah.
So, and then, you know, ironically I got into meth after, but I got into meth more because, well, first from a girl I had met in the psych ward years before. Like we had become a very unhealthy, you know, enabling friendship where we both dealt with cutting and like eating disorder stuff and then off and on with the drug stuff. But she got me into meth to lose weight.
Oh yeah.
Which
great
is
diet.
Hilarious. Cause like, yeah, it's like, where'd you get into meth? Cause I want to be thin, but right. It's like, it does work, but still it's like an insane,
yeah,
extreme way to go about that. You know, exercise just didn't do it.
Mm-hmm.
So
is that why you started doing it?
Meth?
Yeah.
To lose weight.
Really?
Like initially, yeah.
Oh, wow.
It's, yeah, it's really weird.
And it works. So you're like, these drugs do work.
Well, yeah. And then they kind of take over and you stop, you know, your thinness is just a benefit now.
Mm-hmm. Meth's a particularly hard drug on your body.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's because it's like all poison and battery acid. It's just gross shit that you put in your body.
Very chemical.
Ugh.
And also the sleep deprivation is really bad for you.
Yep.
Yeah. How long did you do that for? Steadily.
Ugh. I'd say like, it's weird. I tried to do it as, you know, obviously as often as I could. For,
yeah.
It was like a year to 2 year.
Just doing it all the time.
As much as
possible.
How
would you sleep?
You don't. I ended up in the hospital with 104.7 temperature at the end of it.
Paranoia? Do you have paranoia?
You get paranoia, you know, after being up for several days.
Yeah.
But yeah, the beginning of it's great. Absolutely wonderful drug for like an hour or two. And then it just, the crash, Jesus. It's, yeah. And I didn't sleep. I didn't eat. And yeah, I ended up with just getting severely ill.
Were you using it creatively at all to do something?
Like clean my house.
Yeah.
You know, like that was helpful.
Yeah, it doesn't. I don't think it's necessarily seen as classically creative drug.
Yeah.
Well, people use it productively. They make all kinds of stuff on it.
Yeah. And then they slowly like lose their minds.
Right. I'm cleaning this little crevice with a toothbrush that one can see.
It's an icky drug.
Was there some of that?
Not to that degree, but there was just like nitpicking and like, ugh, yeah, it's a really gross drug.
Have you always been drawn to uppers?
Yeah.
You like the uppers?
So much about uppers. Yeah, I hate downers. I don't fuck around with like, I hate Xanax.
Yeah.
I feel like it just makes me like my cunty timing less, like it just like fucks it up. I don't like it at all. I'll take it when I fly and that's it.
Mm-hmm. So you did the NAAA thing for a while? Did you go through all the steps?
Oh yeah, several times.
You did? You did the whole program?
Like, but I was too young too. Like I didn't, that's again the weird thing. Like I think I just got like attached to the people in it.
Uh-huh. Well, that's a lot of it, isn't it?
I think so. Well, and being from a small town, like New York, it's huge. Your AA.
Yeah.
And you know, you can not see the same person ever if you don't want to.
Right.
Where it's like there was only so many meetings and I was so like the youngest one, obviously, but I loved all these big biker dudes, you know, coming to pick me up from meetings and going to coffee. Like, I can only imagine like what my neighbors thought with like these fucking just rough ex-con bikers.
Yeah.
I get on their Harleys all the time and
well,
stuff.
Well, how old were you at the time?
15, 16, 17.
Wow.
Yeah, I was really young.
So you grew up fast.
Yeah. That's why it's weird now because like I have like this weird bingo addiction.
You're addicted to bingo?
So, but like the app, it's so sad. Like it's so fucked up. Like I pulled my muscle this weekend playing bingo, just holding it all through the snowstorm.
You're already like a modern day grandma.
Oh God. I like went way too fast. And right. Like, I can't, people who know I have like a meth problem, I can't be like, well, now I'm, you know, addicted to my bingo app. Like that's insane. Like I've spent money on this app. You can't win anything, but I just want to buy more. It's crazy.
Is it one of those apps where you have to spend real money to get coins?
To get more. Like, oh, no. They refill like every 24 hours, but you know, again, my addictive personality. I'm like, no, I need more now. So I like,
Are you spending money on this app?
I have.
Yeah.
My boyfriend's taking it away from me now, like a child. Like,
right.
It's so sad.
And no, those things are super addictive. Oh,
it's so terrible.
Mm-hmm.
And I will spend hours playing it.
But you've never been to like actually like bingo night Wednesday night at the church or something like that.
I mean, we had turkey bingo back home, but
you could probably go to an AA meeting at the church and just stay for the bingo.
Oh God!
Later.
So that's like we went down to me and my boyfriend went down to Florida last year, and his mom has a condo in one of those 55 plus resorts, mm-hmm. and like just that's what they do. And yeah. I was like, I could do this. Like, I could quit comedy and move to fucking Florida and just play bingo with these old people, and I'd be so happy.
So you were getting a sense of where you could end up.
Yeah, where I will end up. No doubt if I make it to 55. Totally.
Yeah, 55.
Right?
I was thinking 75.
No, dude. Oh, that's so funny.
That's awesome. So, all right. So are you still using anything?
No, I mean, I drink.
Yeah, but you have things under control? You're under control?
I think so. I mean, yeah. I probably drink too much, but who doesn't?
What is too much?
I drink pretty consistently, nightly. Yeah. Sometimes not, but...
Yeah, but that's kind of normal for New York to
drink. And I didn't used to. That was the weird thing. Like, even after all, you know, I would maybe drink once a month. Uh-huh. Like three Bud Lights.
Well, that's the great thing about crystal meth. When you do it all the time, you don't really want to drink.
I don't know. I just never was a drinker until I moved, like until like my divorce, like around that time. And then I started drinking straight Jameson and I got really good at it.
Did being married and have that traditionally domestic life kind of ground you and like make you not want to party? Or
not anything? At all. No.
Not at all.
Because we weren't like a traditional, it was two comics with a roommate. You know, we slept on a futon. Like what were we trying to do?
Right.
Like,
why did you get married?
You know, I don't like to say no. And he asked. No, it was, I mean, I thought it was fine up until...
I'm not judging at all.
No, it's, I thought, you know, that was the person I was going to be with.
Yeah. So he asked you to marry him as like a way of solidifying your union?
Yeah.
I just don't understand marriage.
I don't either anymore. It was fun. You know, we had a fun wedding. Sean Patton married us. Very funny comic. Uh-huh. It was in a basketball gymnasium. There was like 250 people. Most were comics.
Oh, that sounds fun.
It actually was. It was a great party. Yeah. You know, but I don't know. I just, why not? I thought.
Were you going to have kids?
God, no.
No.
We actually got rid of one the same week we got engaged, which is so ironic. Sorry, pro-choice.
Very much so. Yeah.
I thought you gave birth and got rid of them.
Yeah. No, I would never do that to my body. Did you not hear what I went through to keep it this way? And then just throw it away.
That was your honeymoon?
Yes.
Planned Parenthood honeymoon.
Oh, God. Yeah, that was fun.
Yeah. Well, that's interesting. I like the dichotomy of the very traditional versus the very untraditional.
I think the traditional doesn't even exist anymore.
Well, obviously, you've blasted it.
Right? But it's like, we didn't... I mean, that is the thing that people ask. Like, why'd you get married if you didn't want kids? And it was just... I don't know. We had a dog. I was like... I don't know. I'm sure I could change my mind. People say that all the time. They're like, you're young. You might change your mind. You might want them later. And I'm like, I don't think I will. I'm just not.
Right. Well, you don't have to make that decision now, right?
No, and I don't have to get married to do it, but...
Right. Yeah, exactly.
That was, I don't know. It's weird because my brother, he's been married a bunch of times too, and he's got a kid with another woman, and my sister's got a bunch of kids but never been married.
Yeah.
So it's like, I felt like I won. Because I'm like, I don't have any kids. And I got through a divorce.
So you're not an only child?
No. I'm the youngest of three.
You're the youngest?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, so you had older brother and sister.
Billy Bob and Wendy. Yeah.
Billy Bob, really?
Yeah.
Nice.
Oh, isn't it? No, it's so sad. Like, who gives? And his son's Joe Bob. I'm like, why would you do that? I don't understand.
Are they still in Minnesota?
Of course. Uh-huh. Where are they going?
Or most of the people that you grew up with in that town, they stayed?
Yeah, most of them.
So, but that was like super courageous of you to get on an Amtrak and move out here.
I see that now. Like when I was 20, it didn't register that way. I was like, this is just what people do. Like they just try to escape and run away. Like,
yeah, it felt normal to you.
Yeah. But now, looking back, I'm like, that was fucking nuts. Like anything could have, what was I doing? But I'm glad I did.
Definitely.
And I went back, for my reunion last year and everybody just sucked my dick. It was like the greatest. It was like the story. Like I just went back. I'm not even famous, but like they totally think I am. So I like won. Like I just every person who was ever mean to me, any dude I ever had a crush on, just coming up to me like I saw you on TV, and I'm like, go fuck yourself, but keep telling me how great I am. Like it was like it was like my prom queen moment finally happened. It was so good.
That's great.
That could be very rewarding.
Yeah, it was. It totally like for the wrong reasons.
But it seemed normal to you to move out of there, but obviously it didn't seem normal to everybody else.
Yeah, because nobody, that's not, you don't do that.
They might have been happy to see you go. Like,
I think, get rid of her. You would think. No, I think I upset people more. I think I was a scapegoat for a lot of, like, with my family stuff. I think they liked to pin, that was a thing to pin it on, anything that was going wrong.
Uh-huh.
Like, Justy's messed up, Justy's in the psych ward, she's got all these problems. I think that was, just a way to kind of, like, I was their, like, version of cutting or something. Like, they just got to pin all their problems on me.
Right, scapegoat you for everything, yeah. But your brother and sister, how did they do?
In terms of life.
Well, do they have any
my brother's a drunk. He's a heavy alcoholic. Yeah, and my sister's just angry. Mm-hmm. They're good people. My brother was actually just out here. He visited, and that was just a treat. I love him, but he is insane.
Yeah,
yeah. He asks every black male comic friend if they play basketball. Like it's just like it's this. Ugh, yeah. Like Buffalo, they were here for 5 days and we went to Buffalo Wild Wings like 3 times. I'm like, why do we have to do it? Like they're just so, I don't want to venture out and try new things.
Right, yeah.
But him and his new wife came and she's nice. Yeah, mm-hmm. It's interesting though. God.
Are they just repeating the pattern of your family, of your parents?
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
With less children, I guess. But my parents are still together. They shouldn't be, but they're still together.
Right. They just made it work.
Yeah, they don't like each other. I think my dad likes my mom. I think it's convenience because she doesn't work and he, always was the provider and she just took care. Like, it was very 1950s. Like, mom stayed home. Kids cooked 3 meals a day. And
your dad is funnier than your mom, so it works out.
Oh, God. He's really, they're both not funny. They're, like, both so unfunny.
Well, the older generations, I think they didn't really dream or aspire as much as
they didn't have money to, or my mom was really poor. Like she grew up like in a family of 4 kids and her parents died at 51 and 52 a month apart from severe alcoholism, and like she's never had her own bed. My mom's never had her own bed.
Wow.
She went right from that house sharing it with her sister because they were again so poor right to sharing it with my dad.
They were young when they got married.
21, 20 I think she was. Yeah, he's 3 years older than her, so I forget exactly what age it was, but they had my brother at 21.
Well, now that they're not getting along that well, maybe she can get her own bed.
I mean, he sleeps downstairs a lot, but...
Are you moving in on her mom?
Yeah, sexy Cindy,
As long as she's not funny, then I like her.
No, there's they live in a 4-bedroom, the house my dad built, they still live in it. It's huge. They don't need to... It's
your dad
crazy.
Built the house you grew up in?
Of course he did. What he's a mountain man, right?
Yeah.
He really is. It's crazy. He did all the wiring himself. He's an electrician. He worked in mines.
So as a way for you to rebel, you like marry skinny comics.
Right. Well, James wasn't that skinny, but yeah.
He wasn't?
Not at all. I marry sober ones usually.
Was he a sober one?
Well, when I was with Chris, that's the other comic who I was, he was a sober guy, which my dad couldn't understand. When I brought Chris home to the family's annual party, the beer bash, very upset when he offered Chris a beer, and Chris was like, no thanks. And my dad's like, what do you mean? Chris is like, I don't drink. And he's like, what do you mean you don't drink? Are you sick? you're a man, right?
Of course, right.
Like, did not. And I'm like, Daddy's a recovering alcoholic. And he's like, well, then he should drink better than any of us. And I'm like, no, that's not how this works.
Your dad's a real man.
Oh my God, he's insane. He's funny though, like when he's drunk, but that's about it.
That's hilarious. So one thing that I find interesting is that you seem to be attracted to people that are a little more mentally
stable
than you.
Yeah.
Which is really, really good.
Some
fucked up people I know are attracted to people that are more fucked up than them, so they feel less fucked up.
I mean, I feel like I was like that for a long time. I think that's why I missed dating drug addicts. I was like, I look like the stable one. But no, I think I work on myself enough that I do project like that's what I, or I just try to fix dudes, you know, until like they have the self-esteem to leave me. I'm good at that. Like every guy I've been with in like the last 10 years I put in therapy, and like within 2 years they're like, I'm done with you, dude. And
really?
I'm like, fine. I just made you better. Now you're happy.
How's it going with the new guys? You're getting really, well, he quit smoking. That's good.
He quit drinking too.
He
actually had to quit drinking. Yeah.
You're getting him on the,
he's path. In therapy. Don't worry. I got that. I took care of it.
So he should be done with you in what? 3 months.
So yeah, you're pretty much all these guys rock bottom.
Yeah, I really am. But like, I push them into like, I'm like a good rock bottom. I'm like the beneficial one.
So with your comedy, do you get, does all this pain and experience, you have so much experience, you grow up so fast. Does this inform your stand up?
Yeah, like most of my material is about a lot of that stuff, you know, mixed in with now, what's happening now or whatever. Yeah. I did the Caroline's Breakout Artist like a year or two ago, and that was great because it was just getting to do like an hour of just all this material that was, it is darker, but with, when you have more time, I don't know how much time you've ever done, your longest amount of time, but when you have, you know, when you're featuring or you get to headline, you have so much time to play with the audience before it's like, you know, not just 6 or 7, 10 minutes where it's like, I got to win you over quick and then give you every joke I can give you in this like small amount of time.
Yeah.
So it was a really cool like way to expand and to play with. And you did get to see, I think, who I was through my material with that.
And would you say it's your therapy? Is it therapeutic for you?
It is, but I fucking hate when people do that. Like comics stand on stage, like, this is my therapy. I can't afford it. Yeah, so this is what I have to do. Shut up.
Well, don't say that to the audience.
It's so dumb.
Unless I can invoice you, don't tell me that.
I don't know. Yeah, I mean, it is to a degree because you get it out, but, you know, it certainly isn't the extent of what therapy is.
But do you feel like if you don't get on stage, like, because I kind of feel like if I don't get on stage, something's wrong, building up.
For sure, yeah.
Yeah, so it must be some sort of therapy for us.
Or an addiction. We just, you know.
Oh, right.
You know, that need for validation, that constant need from strangers to like you. Yeah, yeah.
Right. Maybe that is what it is.
Yep.
Who knows? But I enjoy it.
Yeah, it's fun, I guess, sometimes.
That's not destructive.
Oh, it can be.
How so? How can that?
I think a lot of comics want to be more fucked up than they are because they think that's going to lend itself when you don't have to be. You know what I mean? Like, so I feel like so many of them like refuse to work on their issues because they're scared if they get healthy or they won't be funny anymore.
Yeah.
Like, you don't have to be fucked up to be funny. It actually is better when you're not fucked up and you're working on things because that opens more doors for you to, you know. And like you're saying, sometimes stuff will come out if it's too close to like the surface or it just happened with that emotion. So it's like, unless you're dealing with some of that shit, how are you going to make it funny when you know what I mean? Does
exactly.
that make sense?
Absolutely.
I'm rambling now.
No, I think stuff has to be a little bit under the surface to make
it
funny.
Yeah, you got to deal with it.
Mm-hmm. And how's it going? Like, are you afraid to put a lot of your stuff on stage?
No.
No?
I'll put it on. And at this point, it's like, what am I going to do? I think the only thing that I don't like anymore is that people love to tell me their problems. And I think it has to do with that after you see my set.
Yeah.
And I don't know if it's like, oh, you get this. Or it's like, you're too fucked up to judge me, so I can tell you. Like, I don't know what it is.
Well, do you talk about cutting on stage?
Talk about all of it. Yeah.
Okay, so if say like a 15-year-old girl comes up to you and is like, "Oh, you know, I'm a cutter too," do you feel a sense of responsibility as a role model?
I feel like it's kind of fulfilling though. Like you're giving back, if that makes sense. Like I feel like that's why, you know, I do stuff like that or I talk about those things because I do think it can help people. Not like I'm trying to, you know, I'm not a motivational speaker in, you know, a gym, but you know, I think a lot of stuff does stem from pain and I think it's relatable in that sense. Like I did a podcast, Ari Shaffir's podcast one time, and it was all about cutting. Like he has a theme, and I got so many emails, and, like messages from people just thanking me. And that felt really cool and rewarding and worth it.
Yeah, I think cutting is not something you hear about so much. No. I feel like it's such a shamed thing.
Yeah, I mean, it's gotten a little more open, I think.
It's mostly female, is that right?
A majority, but there are there are guys that do it too.
Mm-hmm. Do you know why that is?
I think, I mean, if I was to guess, I think just that women are more, they tend to be more open about their emotions, and it kind of, I think it comes out a little bit different. Or if a guy is supposed to, you know, if a guy is cutting, I think it's viewed as weak and sad. Like, not that it's not with a female, but for some reason, I think guys would feel more shame or like embarrassed. It's like guys with eating disorders. Like it's, I think, harder for them to come out about it or to talk.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I think it happens a lot. And I think it's a very common thing.
Yeah. You don't hear it with guys. I know Elliot Smith was a cutter.
Yeah.
And I don't think that's public information.
It is now, Gary. It is
now. Well, I know I have a friend that knew him.
Yeah.
So, yeah. But yeah, it's a weird thing. Well, that's why I asked about the suicide, because he supposedly committed suicide.
Oh, okay.
But you were never cutting yourself and you're like looking at your wrist. Like I could just cut myself right on my wrist
also,
and
cuts,
end it.
Cuts, like, you gotta cut a certain, you know, most cuts are like
surface.
Yeah, well, they're just like back and forth, as opposed to like when you're slitting your wrist, like there's a way to slit your wrist. You know what I mean? If you're trying to kill yourself, you're gonna go up to down. Like you're gonna give a.
So you never had that thought? You never just cut it?
I've had the thought, sure. Mm-hmm. I've done it. Like when I was younger, I OD'd and I also, yeah.
So you did try.
But it wasn't, the cutting had nothing to do with it.
Mm-hmm. Nothing to do with it?
No.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think.
Are you glad to be alive now?
Some days, you know. I mean, life is exhausting as fuck.
Uh-huh.
Of course. I mean, yeah, I'm not going to, you know, jump out a window or anything.
Yeah. Well, then you're in the right place. Maybe because you're just down in the basement.
Yeah, I would lose my mind with no windows.
Would you?
Yeah.
Yeah. You could jump out the window here, but you would just be on the ground.
Right. You won't get hurt.
You can crawl out.
You'd be crawling out the ground.
That's funny.
That's why I live in a basement.
In case you have to crawl out, or so you never jump out of a window.
So I never jump out of a window.
What a terrible way to go, too. Like, what a stupid way to... Like, why?
Well, yeah, this is a common thing. There was a whole book on people that tried to kill themselves. And a lot of people, when they jump off a building or a bridge or something, right when they got past... Right when they pushed off the path of no return, they regretted it.
Of course.
Yeah. So, like, most people that try to kill themselves and don't do it, regret it.
Yeah, I could see that. That's really, but what a bad, like, take pills like an adult and go to sleep. Like, what are you doing? Like, you're gonna fuck up everybody's day if you jump out of a window.
I know, there's so many.
Yeah, and I feel like that's part of it a lot of times, too. Like, someone who, like, jumps in front of a train, it's like, you know that you were, first of all, you're giving horrible visions to anyone that sees it.
Right.
And you're fucking with everybody's day.
Yeah, it's,
you know.
And what a terrible way to go. What a terrible way to go.
Yeah, I saw someone jump in front of an L train and they pulled him out and he had survived, but, like, part of his body was sticking up in weird places.
Ugh.
It was really nasty.
Yeah, that's a horrible way to go.
Yeah. Bottle it up and take it out on your loved ones.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So how do you deal with your anger and stuff like that?
Now?
Yeah.
Ugh, my boyfriend. No.
Just beat up your boyfriend.
All the time, emotionally. No. I used to work out a lot. I don't do that as much. I guess the stand-up, I will. Mm-hmm. I used to take some kickboxing classes that helped with the aggression.
Yeah, physical exercise,
right? Yeah, to
get
that out. I walk every day. I mean, a lot. Walking does help me. It centers
walking helps, but it doesn't do it like running, because you never get like...
You're not getting the adrenaline rush.
Exactly.
And endorphins aren't being released, but...
Yeah, blood's not pumping. Muscles aren't being used, so...
So I fuck. That's what I do. I fuck to get my aggression out.
It's good.
I fuck my boyfriend.
Well, it does seem the anger, or whatever you're calling it, does inform your comedy, your personality. And even though you think you wouldn't make a good actress, I think that character, there is a place for it. And
I think I'm a fantastic actress.
I think at some point someone will come to you with this part and
they
be like,
should.
Like, you're going to be like the person in this web series or movie that's an awesome, but it's going to be similar to who you are and it's going to be very entertaining.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah. Well, and also like... you know, if you're heartbroken, you can use that heartbroken feeling to make amazing things.
Yeah.
Instead of just trying to repair it.
Yeah.
It's like this anger or whatever you call it that you have inside of you can propel you. You know, it just it could either like propel you to the ground.
Sure. No, I've used a lot of that with like scenes in acting or, you know, just through stand up.
Yeah. I think our society is like, oh, you got to deal with that and make it right. But no.
You should deal with it, but like, you can't, dude, go through the emotions because that's the best way to, you know, whatever. I hate when people, people don't want to deal with it. Obviously, it hurts, you know, any kind of heartbreak. But you can't, it'll come out eventually. You can repress it for as long as you, it will come out sideways then. It will, somehow it will get out of you. And it's better to just like allow yourself to feel, deal with it, you know, accordingly.
Yeah.
And like you're saying, like use it, it can go, you can, you know, make you help or, you know, hinder, but.
Yeah. And there shouldn't be any shame in feeling it.
No.
And use, especially because you could use it to, you know, propel you, make you very motivated, make you write, whatever.
I mean, don't cry in public because that's gross and no one wants to see that. Be an adult and go to the bathroom.
Sometimes I like when someone cries in public because it reminds everyone that we're, you know, anyone's capable of it.
Yeah, go watch a movie. I hate that.
I saw a girl crying on a train the other day. Yeah, and it made me uncomfortable. I was like, should I say something?
Right?
But that's just, who am I to be like, are you okay?
Yeah, so you just look like the creepy guy who's trying to take advantage.
Instead, I just basically stared at her. She was right for like, you know, like 20 minutes. I mean, I had to just look at her crying. And we were just, you know, it was weird.
Awkward.
Yeah. You didn't just take a picture of her to post it?
I did not, no.
Look at this dumb crying girl on the L train.
You know Paul Hooper? He's a comic.
Yeah, yeah.
He thinks it's the funniest thing to see somebody crying or puking on the subway. It gives him an insane amount of joy.
Yeah.
Like, he will take videos and it's the grossest shit. Like, when people are, he thinks it's hilarious.
He's such the road comic.
He'll just, yeah, dude. But he's not, that's the weird thing is, like, he's a road guy, but he's so not hacky and he's so not.
Yeah, yeah.
He's so funny. I don't know if you know who Paul is, but he's
very dark in a very
cool way. He'll take me on the road sometimes with him. I'll feature for him, and it's I mean, it's just us two in a car.
Yeah,
is probably traumatizing for anybody with us because we used to make my ex-husband so uncomfortable because we just feed off each other's
negativity.
You know, oh God, just back and forth, that, and he's got OCD, so obviously I fuck with him.
Right,
and we're just terrible to each other, just obnoxious.
Well, your ex-husband, he doesn't seem negative to me at all. I mean, I don't know him, but...
No, he's not.
He's not, right?
Very annoying.
Boring.
it's too much. It's like, nobody's that happy. Shut up.
Well, now he's in LA, so he'll fit in.
Ugh. Fine.
So what's next for you? No more cutting, right?
I hope not.
Yeah? Is this still an everyday battle?
Yeah, I mean, it's not like... as conscious as, you know, I'm not like, oh, I don't really want to cut right now. It's like, but it comes up, you know, especially when bad things happen. Or
what do you, is there any tool you have to deal with it when it comes up?
Well, like, they call it surfing the urge. So you find, you know, something to do while you're feeling like you want to cut. Like, I do a lot of walking. Mm-hmm. Like, I'll go outside, I'll be around, you know, in public for the most part.
You replace the action with another action.
Yeah. Or I used to color a lot and paint. Mm-hmm. I have my walls were all painted in my old apartment. I just get like into that groove. I make mushrooms and shit all over the walls.
Uh-huh.
But yeah, I try. Or I'll call I'll text my therapist.
Right. That's good. Something.
Something.
Yeah. Because it leaves you with scars, right?
Oh yeah. My body super scarred. Yeah.
Yeah. We should get a picture of your scars.
You can. It's not as weird as you think. Like, people will do that all day. Like, can I see it? And I'm like, yeah, it's you can see it whenever I wear a tank top. Like, it's not a big deal.
Right. Yeah.
But.
Any shows coming up?
What do I have? I'm going to be on Red Eye in a couple of weeks.
Oh, cool.
Fox, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Do you know what the subject's going to be yet?
No, I'm so scared.
Are you into politics?
Nope. That's why I'm so scared.
Yeah. So but, like a few days before you just start watching the news and.
Yeah, I mean, I'm informed enough. Like, I do watch the news and what have you. And I also, I mean, I've seen other people on there and they can play it off. You know what I mean? You can still, whatever. You don't have to be a raging psychopath.
You could probably get through it not even knowing what the hell's going on.
I think you could if you do it right. Yeah.
Totally. Exactly. Well, thank you so much for sharing your life.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah.
This was fun.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.